What is the General Conference of Elders? We call it the GCE for short. What is accomplished? What do we do back there? Why is so much money spent on this annual gathering of ministers and wives from all over the world? I'd like to give you an overview today and answer some of those questions as a reminder, and give you the spiritual highlights, not just a lot of facts. I'm not going to be giving you a lot of statistics and data, except maybe in a few areas from the international reports and how much some of the areas of God's church are growing, what God is doing in some of those areas. But try to bring out the things that would be more interesting than just statistics to you and for you. The General Conference of Elders is something that we have to hold. It's a part of our constitution and bylaws. When United was formed in 1995, we put together how we would be organized and how we would cooperate and work together. So it's written into our constitution and bylaws that we must have an annual meeting of our elders and ministers, those who are able to make it, and those who don't make it either are hooked up by telephone or cybercast or have sent in information ahead of time, giving their input. So every minister and elder worldwide is involved in what goes on. And the purpose of the General Conference of Elders is to consider very important issues concerning the church, its mission and its purpose and its goals, to establish a budget like we have to do locally for our congregation, and how we're going to accomplish those goals. The meetings begin with the Sabbath. Most everyone flies in on Friday. Some of us go back a little bit early because there are meetings prior to the General Conference of Elders, but I'm going to focus just on what happens beginning with the Sabbath. So last Sabbath, for instance, not right at the home office, but we meet at the Holiday Inn. It's a nice facility, not elaborate, but as you know, Holiday Inns are nice. And this is quite a large one, and they give us special rates because of the size of the group that is there. And so this year, and these are approximate numbers, there were approximately 250 elders in attendance from around the world, mostly from the U.S., of course, approximately 150 wives, and I'm just rounding this off so it's easier for you to have it in mind, approximately 150 wives were able to make it. And on the Sabbath, joining us for the Sabbath services, there were about 350 members from the local congregations. So you can see, I mean, the hall was packed to overflowing, and actually there was an overflow room where some had to watch on television. So that was quite a large group. And on the Sabbath, a week ago, we heard split sermons. I'll give you highlights of this, and I will be able to get a tape, and then one of these times we can play it for you because I may pique your interest in what was given last Sabbath. We haven't hooked in ourselves. It is possible for a congregation to hook in live, but there's a three-hour difference time-wise, of course, between us and them, so it would mean we would have to meet earlier in the morning on the Sabbath. So we could do that someday if a majority of the congregation agrees and would be willing to come in, say, like 10 o'clock on a Sabbath morning, we could hook in back there. But I'll bring a tape and we can play it sometime. The split sermons last Sabbath in Cincinnati, the first one was by Mr. Andre Van Belkom, who is the manager of our churches and work in South Africa. He speaks English, of course. And he started by playing a tape, didn't say what it was, and he let everybody listen, and it was this moan and groan, and it developed into more of a roar. And it was a recording of lions on the warpath, so to speak, hunting. And his message, and I'm only going to give you the highlights because of time constraints, his message was this. One thing they've learned about lions, and you can begin to pick up on the analogy of Satan being the roaring lion. He's called that in the Bible, right? It tells us in Ephesians chapter 6 to put on the armor of God that we may be able to stand in front of the devil, his wiles, his attacks. And in those verses there, it mentions that whenever Satan attacks, that what Christians are to do is to stand firm. And he mentioned the Greek word stand, and it's mentioned 3 or 4 times in there. It means to stand firm in the face of attack. Then he went on to talk about what they've learned about lions out in the wild. What would you normally do if a lion attacked you? You'd run, right? What would you do? He wouldn't. What would he do, did he say? He'd shoot it. Well, what if you don't have a gun, though? Maybe only a slingshot, right? But the normal thing that, you know, this the human nature and what most other creatures and animals do, you know, the smaller ones they hunt, they run. They catch them and kill them. But you know what they found? The best defense is when a lion charges, it takes a lot of courage. You stand firm. You definitely do not run. Do not turn your back. Do not run. If you were caught out in the wild and a lion charged, looking straight in the eye, can you imagine doing this? Heart thumping. But your best chance of survival, 9 times out of 10, they have discovered that if you stand firm and look that, it's a mock, they call it a mock charge. He's trying to frighten you. 9 times out of 10, if you as a human being stand firm and look them in the eye and just act like you're not afraid, they'll go away. Because they're used to the animals they chase fleeing. And they go after them and kill them. Fascinating message. Then going through the scriptures in the Bible, God tells us the same thing as Christians. Whenever you're attacked, stand firm. That word is used over and over and over, even when you're afraid. Fascinating. And the other split sermon was given by Mr. Aaron Dean, who is a member of the Council of Elders and a minister in Big Sandy, Texas, and not employed by the church. He's one of our local church elders. But those of you who know Aaron Dean had a very unusual experience in his lifetime in that he traveled with Mr. Herbert Armstrong, assisting him and served as a steward on the plane that the church owned, serving on the plane. And he got up, you know, dressed in a suit, took his, everybody said, what? What's he doing? He thought, he's going to get off the, he took his jacket off, put it down, and then he reached under and pulled out a red jacket from underneath and put on his red coat. And he said, those of you who are just listening on the phone, he described it and he explained what this jacket was. It's a servant's jacket, a steward's jacket that he always wore when he was on the plane or serving in any capacity. And his message was a very good one, that we're called to be servants of other people. And not everybody has learned that lesson. He brought out many personal examples of his travels with Mr. Armstrong. So we'll get the tape of those messages and you'll be able to hear them in detail later, but whet your appetite. So that's the Sabbath, and there's fellowship in the evening and time to with everybody. But let's go to Sunday. Sunday is the day that is filled with the business of the church. Stop and think. You can travel around the world and attend congregations of the United Church of God. There are about 20,000 of us now worldwide. You can go to the Feast of Tabernacles and who knows how many, what is it, 30, 40 sites now? Those things have to be planned and organized. It doesn't just happen, does it? And the main reason for the GCE, not only can all the festival coordinators worldwide get together and plan the feasts, the main reason for this annual meeting is also to plan how we're going to accomplish the work of God more effectively and more efficiently. Sunday morning, for instance, well, actually, and this is an annual thing every year, 2 significant things or important things happened Sunday morning before we actually got into the part where every elder receives a sheet of the things that need to be balloted on or approved by the elders. I'll get to that in a moment. Every Sunday morning, the first thing that happens are presentations from the international elders. For instance, this year, the international reports, and these are always extremely encouraging and helpful and positive. You know, to hear a minister who's living in Ghana or India, we don't have anyone living there now, but we do have a minister who takes care of that area, telling about the conditions that many of our brethren live under in the rest of the world, it's sobering, and it makes you realize, how much they need God's help and blessing. We all do, but some so much more. The international reports, we all really look forward to them. And they're not all given every year because there's so many international areas. So 1 year, half of them, then the next year, the other half. So they alternate giving these reports. This year, we heard international reports from Canada, Rainer Saloma. And we now have nearly 700 brethren attending in our Canadian churches and six salaried ministers, six salaried elders up there. And they're beginning to grow slowly. And in so many areas, it's about 10% of what we once had back in the height of worldwide days. In the Caribbean area, Mr. Arnold Hampton and Kingsley Mather serve. And they take turns giving a report covering the Caribbean islands, which is a huge area, as many of you know. Lots of islands, very scattered out. So Arnold Hampton gave the report this year. Next year it'll be Kingsley Mather. They work together in that area. And both of these men, Arnold Hampton, Kingsley Mather, are black, but they're very dynamic speakers. I mean, Arnold Hampton has this powerful voice. Sorry, didn't mean to shock you, but it's just natural. He's just got this dynamic, powerful personality. And he really wakes you up if you happen to be asleep. And he doesn't have to put on either. So I can just imagine him, and Kingsley Mather's a lot like that too. I can just imagine them traveling throughout the Caribbean islands, you know, with these powerful messages that they have a lot of public. The members all, they put ads in the paper down there, and then the members go everywhere handing out invitations personally to people on the street, family, neighbors. It's different, you know, in the way they do things. And they get an excellent response of people, former Worldwide Church members, and people off the street coming in. So they're growing. Italy, we heard the report from Italy, Carmelo Anastasi. How many of you have been to the feast in Italy? A number of you. It's always fun, isn't it? And great. They know how to put on the feast. But Carmelo always is very inspiring in his report of what it's like to live in the shadow of, he's careful what he says publicly, but over here he can speak a little bit more of the false religion, the false prophet, and the power of the church over there. And that the church knows who we are. They know who we are. And they are small, but growing. They're about 50 members, and they're beginning to grow. And then giving a report on the Far East, that is the area of the Philippines and Asian countries, was Mr. David Baker. And in that area, he's one of our pastors over here, but Dave Baker was baptized. He served over there as part of some foundation projects. Remember when we had the foundation in Worldwide Days? And so he served for years in that part of the world. He was baptized over there. He was married over there. And he was ordained over there in that part of the world. And so he relates to the people and knows a lot of them over there. In the Philippines and Asia, we have about 500 members, most of them, of course, in the Philippines. So that area of the world is, again, stirring and growing. And many of them are writing us and wanting contact, those who want to keep the Sabbath and the holy days and keep God's commandments. Then the final international report was given about Ghana and Africa by Melvin Rhodes, who is one of our pastors in Michigan, but who services that area. Some of our men, who he has one church, it was worked out for him to have one smaller congregation. And Melvin Rhodes is English from, you know, and he's just, the British have a feel for that area and have an influence in that area. And Ghana is interesting. It's a more peaceful country. Let's see, who was I just talking to? It's going to be going there for, our friend Mr. Smith back there, yeah. We'll be going to Ghana to serve. What are you going to be doing there? Tell us a little bit. Mind me, I'm saying this is not a regular sermon, you can tell, or I wouldn't be doing this. The Youth Corps Project. Yeah, that'll be a great opportunity. We have 11 pastors that have joined the United Church of God from what was formerly the Remnant Church of God, and over 1,000 members. These are people who want to keep the Sabbath and God's holy days, and it's amazing with the internet today, most of them don't have that, but their leaders do. And they get on the internet and they start searching for churches that are going to keep God's commandments and laws, as they know the former church that they were associated with left it. And so we have a large contingent of members and pastors who have totally accepted the beliefs and the truths of God and are now part of the church. So if you were to go visit down there, you'd meet a lot of people in the Church of God, United Church of God. They wanted to change their name and have done so to the United Church of God. So it's fascinating what's happening around the world. The feel that you get, and there was one more area, the feel that you get when you hear these reports is that even if we don't have any advertising or anything going on in many countries of the world, God is already working there calling people. He does it. He's not limited by media, is he, or any other way. He just begins to call people in many different ways. And then they start searching for, there must be others who believe what I read in the Bible. It's just awesome what's going on. You know, we don't have any idea how many thousands are around the world that are going to become a part of God's church as time goes on. And we'll be here to help them, you know, because they need and look to America, because we're the most powerful nation on earth and the most wealthy. They look to us, not always for money, but they look to us for leadership, some financial support sometimes, and just to be a part of a larger body, the body of God, the Church of God. The last international report was on the United Kingdom by Mr. Peter Hawkins. Mr. Hawkins is an Englishman who was serving in South Africa and was transferred to England to replace Mr. John Jewell. Mr. Jewell, who used to be with United, is no longer with the United Church of God. I won't go into detail on the problems there. You may have heard about that or read about that, but and I have a lot of love for Mr. Jewell and still pray for him, but he's no longer with the United Church of God. So Mr. Peter Hawkins is there, very, very fine man. The English are amazing. There was an entertainment night where any ministers who have musical ability or whatever they want to do could perform. And here was Peter Hawkins and another one of the Englishmen there up there doing a song from one of the musicals, like My Fair Lady, you know, something along that, actually singing it, you know, and you think they're all kind of reserved and all, oh, it's amazing. They were funny. They were really funny. But also some other good news over there is that every elder that was with United is still with United, and almost every member stayed with United. So the work continues in England. A little under 100 members right now. So it was wonderful to hear of the international reports. It broadens your mind and your heart and makes you want very much to reach out to help some of them, which we're going to try to do more as a congregation, to have an outreach program so that we can work through and help. We'll work through the men who serve in those areas so we know the needs, but so that we can give more to help them in any way possible. Okay, that was the international report Sunday morning. One other thing that took place Sunday morning, which was the first time we've ever done it, was a special tribute to elders and wives who have died since United started. That's something that will be done every year. This is the first time. We haven't done it since we started in 1995, and there have been 28 elders and wives who died. And so they put together a really fine, colorful booklet on each elder or wife that had died, giving their years of service in the church, where they served, and Mr. Ken Giese had put it together with others helping him, and you can imagine a large screen, but had their picture up there, pictures that were sent by other family members, who they were, and then Mr. Giese read comments from loved ones and family and friends, others, about them. Some of the members that ministers and wives that you may know, for instance, you would have related to would be Mr. Gerald Waterhouse. So most of you have heard him in past years. He died 2002. Mr. Valden White. How many of you remember Mr. the White family? Glenn White used to serve here. Mr. Valden White is his father. They served in the Northwest for many, many years. And Mrs. White is still alive in Spokane. He died in 1997. Longtime minister in the church, came with United. And one of the elders in the Northwest who lived right up in Cedro Woolley in Mr. Siegel's church area, Mr. Richard Case. You might not have known him, but he was one of the elders who served in the church. He died in 2001. His wife, of course, is still there. So that was very, very moving to sit there. And it took about an hour and a half to go through the life of each person. And what was, you know, I started sitting there thinking, next year there'll be fewer, you know, because we've covered 8 years. And there may be one or two more added by next year. As time goes on, maybe more. But, you know, you see the record of faithful service. And a lot of people didn't even know who they were except their loved ones. But they gave their lives in service to God and His people. And it's not hard to sit there and realize that if time goes on, there'd be a picture of me up there. Deceased, gone. And I hope that it's a good record that is written when that happens. But that was a very moving thing, and you can imagine there were tears because some of the mates were sitting there in the meeting seeing the pictures of their loved one who died. There were some tears, as you can imagine, but sometimes tears of joy as well. Sunday afternoon, last Sunday, this is when we get into actual important church business. What is the important church business? You may not be that directly interested in it, but it impacts you whether you know it or not. Here's the church business that we handle on Sunday afternoon. That is the election of new council members. The council of elders would be the equivalent of the board of directors. They're the ones that meet four times a year, all 12 of them, and supervise the activities of the church. They make the decisions with input from all elders. And let me mention here, I think I brought that up for you, what the changes are in the Council of Elders. There are 12 men, and the way we designed it is that every year, three men on the Council of Elders have to stand for, or is it four? I have to look that up. So that you're not re-electing, you're not replacing all men every year and creating problems in the church. You want continuity. You want... So it's only a portion of the council members, like, what is it, three or four? I can't remember. Four, thank you. Thank you, Jerry. Four are up for re-election every year. And let me give you the names of those who were elected and put back on the Council of Elders and those who were not this year. Hope I brought that one up with me. I think I did. Right here it is, yes. Mr. Bob Dick was re-elected to be on the Council of Elders. You know him well, of course. Bob's down in Portland now as a pastor. Mr. Richard Thompson was re-elected to be back on the council. He now serves in one of the churches in Florida. And Mr. Mario Segley, who is in Southern California pastoring the church I pastored before coming here, Garden Grove, California. He was re-elected to the Council of Elders. Mr. Gary Antion, who's been on the council for the last number of years, was not re-elected. And sometimes it can be very close. But Mr. Gary Antion works at the home office in Cincinnati, and he is the director of our Ambassador Bible Center there. So he's got plenty to do, and he said, hey, I'm busy man. If it doesn't work out, no problem. Then also up for re-election will be international men. There are three men on the Council of Elders who represent international areas. That's a part of our bylaws, so that we always have men on the council, so it doesn't become all just U.S. men only and not international areas represented. Mr. Tony Wasilkoff of Canada was chosen by all of the elders, all putting our name, putting the names down that we would support for this, is now on the Council of Elders, Mr. Tony Wasilkoff, and he directs the office manager. He's the office manager in Canada. And Mr. Joel Meeker, who oversees the French-speaking areas of the church, is now on the Council of Elders. So those are kind of the changes on our Council of Elders at this point. So that's one of the things that we do. These are very important jobs that these men have. The other important thing that we do is that we all have to approve or disapprove our strategic plan. Remember when we sat down as a congregation years ago and developed a plan together? It's goals and objectives that you have. So here's the strategic plan for the church that we have. I just want you may all know that we have one. The strategic plan gives the vision of our church and the mission and the goals that we want to accomplish, the overall purposes of the church. And the operation plan that has to be approved every year goes into the details for this coming year, 2003-2004. You can get a copy of any of this. If you would like to know, all right, what are the goals for the United Church of God this coming year? What are we going to accomplish? You might be interested in looking at that. And the budget for the coming year has to be approved by all of the elders. And all of these three things were approved. And our income for this year, a report from Mr. Tom Kirkpatrick, the secretary, is good news. You know, something we can really be thankful for is that we stayed within the budget last year of $18 million, and this coming year, the projected budget for the next fiscal year, 2003-2004, is going to be $19 million. That'll be about a 4% increase over last year's budget. So even with the economic problems we're having in our country, the income has held steady and even is continuing to grow several percent each year. It's a blessing from God. And what that means is that our ability to reach out and contact more people with the truth of God continues to grow. So that was a positive report. We're really thankful. We're able to budget for an increase next year in preaching the gospel and doing the work. So that was all approved by the elders. That means I'll have a salary next year. See, it's important, isn't it? And when they approve the budget, they're approving the salaries of all the pastors and approving some areas, some churches. We don't need a subsidy because we have enough donations locally that we have enough funds locally to pay for the things that we do locally. But a lot of smaller congregations, they're subsidized from the home office, their expenses and everything they do. So they really depend upon that budget being approved. Then there are usually amendments. If there are any amendments to our governing documents, we have to decide whether we like them or not and approve them or not. And there were two very minor ones approved of no great significance. Our bylaws state that our annual meeting of the General Conference of Elders will take place at the home office. Well, that's incorrect. It's never, I think maybe the first one did. We were so small. But now we're so big, there's no way we can meet at our home office. So that was a very technical wording change, and that was approved, of course. And then another one that was approved, an amendment to our bylaws, was that the Council of Elders may be notified electronically for short notice of meetings. I had to change a wording there when they need to have an emergency meeting. An amendment that was put forward by some of the elders to the bylaws that was not approved was a requirement that any minister who would be representing an international area be required to live internationally. That was not passed. So a man, for instance, give you two examples. Mr. Leon Walker, who has supervised, overseed the Spanish area, he lives in Big Sandy, Texas, and always have. And now Mr. Joel Meeker, who oversees the French areas, he lives in Missouri. And what some of the men, some of the elders in the church and a number of them put forth an amendment, we have a procedure, they put forth a recommendation that we work and plan toward the representatives on the council being men who actually live overseas internationally. And that was defeated. It was not passed. All right. Sunday afternoon, after that balloting and everything is over, Mr. Roy Halladay, the president gives a report, progress of the work in the church. So that's an important report. The president, who lives at the home office in Cincinnati, is responsible for supervising every day the activities of the home office and the home office staff. And he and his staff, the operations managers, have regular weekly meetings to look at the goals of the operation plan. And are we accomplishing our objectives as a church? Are we preaching the gospel effectively? Are we growing? Are we moving forward? What changes do we need to make? So it's really important. The president supervises the day-to-day aspects of the church and the work. And so Mr. Halladay gave a good report that we are growing, but slowly. We have slow growth. Now, we've only been in existence 8 years, and we've had some of our own internal traumas, as you know, a few years ago that set us back. But we're moving forward again, and there is growth. Mr. Kirkpatrick gives his treasurer's report, and I've already given you that. And he goes into more detail, though, about the budget. Mr. Richard Pennelly then gives a report about the ministry and the churches. He's the operations manager of ministerial services. And one of the great needs in United that you can keep praying about is the need for newer, younger pastors for the future. We're getting up there, right, in years and in age. The average age now of our ministry is in the late 50s as far as age, approaching 60 years old. In Canada, the average age of the ministry up there is in the low 60s. They're already in their 60s. And a lot of the men say, I can make it about 10 more years. So it's really urgent in the next 5 to 10 years. And we do have some younger men coming along, thank God. And you'll be hearing more about this as well. Who is God calling to the ministry? What women is God calling to be the wives of our ministers in the future? So there is a program to develop future ministers, wives, and leaders in the church. So that's a very important part of his report, how we're planning for the future. And then Mr. Peter Eddington, an Australian who works at the home office, oversees the media and communication area, that is, all advertising, all outreach of all kinds and all types, very important part of the work. Churches that don't reach out die. So it's really important that you're reaching out and proclaiming the truth to the world. And we're beginning to do that more and more. One of the most powerful and effective means, I think most of you would realize, is what? You know where we're getting the most responses of all? Anybody have a wild guess? The computer. Yeah, internet. Heard some of you say that. I mean, more and more people have computers, use computers, are learning to go on. I mean, it's us, the older generation, that isn't as fast or quick on it. But boy, a new generation, everybody does. And they'll get on there. So it's really important that our website, and we're improving it, that if they put in, say they want to know something about Sabbath, holy days, Trinity, any subject, they can type it in there, and will come up as one of the options. So that is growing incredibly, how many people are contacting us and wanting to know about we're going to get it where they can download all of our literature, everything and anything they want. They can just either just read it or download it from our webpage. And very soon, we'll have a program which has been developed by Mr. Dan Deininger, one of our elders in Montana. Helena, over there, maybe you've heard of him. He's got his own business and computer. He is developing a program where, like our Bible correspondence course, anything like that, people can go on. Any of the ABC classes, they could go on computer and learn that subject and take the tests and give feedback. So eventually, we'll be right up to snuff and all that stuff on the computer. So it's a very important area for the future. Okay, I'm doing pretty good. We're going to be all right. And then each year we have three different pastors share some of the things they've learned pastoring. Mr. Paul Lukey in North Dakota has very small scattered flocks, and he told about the benefits of serving small scattered groups of God's people, where he said, everybody knows everybody, including the names of every child when they're small. And everybody does everything together. And every Sabbath is, you know, so he went on with all the benefits when you're a small group of people. And the minister knows everybody, and everybody knows the minister. So it was good to see a minister focus on the advantages and benefits of having small scattered groups of people. Mr. Jim Chapman, another pastor, spoke on the pastor as a friend, importance of friendship. And Mr. Dale Schurter, who used to be in charge of the farming program at Big Sandy, Texas, has always had an interest in health. Mr. Schurter is in his early 60s, but he's got to retire from the ministry this summer because he almost died recently. His adrenal glands, you know, your adrenal glands have to do with your energy level. And he said they it can, in a normal and best, is up 10, 20. He was down to 0.2 of 1%. You know, he would faint and collapse. And he took a nap once, and his heart stopped, and he stopped breathing. And it was, if it weren't for his wife, he would have been a goner. What was the problem? His title of his message was, If I Had It to Do Over Again. Mr. Schurter is a energetic, type A personality, go, 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 drive, and then very dedicated. And what we in the ministry don't do is we don't keep the Sabbath. Sounds funny, doesn't it? I'm here keeping the Sabbath with you, but it's one of our hardest work days. And especially if you have several congregations, it's, you know, we love it and we enjoy it, but it's a work day. Put a lot of energy and effort preparing your message. I usually do the bulk of mine on the Sabbath, and it's fresher and more, I just, rather than a week ahead of time or something. But what he did, Mr. Schurter, he said, you know, I never ever took a day off and I didn't rest. I didn't obey God. I broke the fourth commandment. Remember the Sabbath, keep it holy. But the second part says you shall rest. 6 days you shall do your work, and one is a day of rest. And he said, I never took a day off from work. Rarely took vacations. And said, no, he said, I'm now paying the penalty. The doctor said, we can get your adrenal gland energy level up to about 60% of normal, but that's going to be it. And if you value your life, you will reduce your stress and workload. So he's going to have to retire from the full-time ministry. His advice to all of us who are still alive is to take time off and rest, or you'll pay the penalty down the line by violating God's law. All right. That was Sunday. Monday, see, the actual GCE is one day when the church elders are there to do their business. And while we're there, Monday, a whole day Monday, is set aside for educational classes and seminars all day long. And the theme this year was maximizing your ministry. Just very quickly, without giving you any details, give you an idea of what we're talking about, how we are trying to grow and change and learn. Here, all of the subjects that were offered, 15 different workshops, and we had to choose five of them that we could fit in on that day, Monday. Here was the first one. And I took this one and spent most of my day on this one because it was almost on an all-day, at least a half-a-day affair. It's called Life Innovation Certification. This half-day seminar allowed ministers and their wives to be certified to use the Prepare Enrich premarital and marital counseling tool that is one of the most effective in the United States. So I'm now certified now to administer this. It's not a test, but it's been proven 90-some percent accurate and successful in helping to determine in relationships before marriage and after marriage, even if there are marriage problems, to help successfully point out those areas and to give proper help to those people. So I took that one, and I'm certified to do that now, to be more effective in premarital and marriage counseling. But going on without mentioning other detail, speaking skills, part one, how to create sleeplessness rather than putting people to sleep. Speaking skills, part two, effective interactive teaching, how to use interaction with people effectively in church, Bible studies, small groups. effective marriage counseling, 3 steps to effective referral counseling. Mr. John Seforek and I taught that one. He did one in the morning. I was in this other class, and together we did it in the afternoon. Referral counseling has to do with very serious problems where you need to go to a specialist outside the ministry. Teaching PowerPoint, the basics or advanced PowerPoint, the use of the computer. Maximizing your youth pastoral skills. Financial planning for the ministry. Preparing for retirement, another one. Developing leadership mentoring skills, helping others become leaders. Maximizing your leadership skills. Maintaining your health and through exercise. Mr. Charles Malir's wife is a certified teacher, and she's on the American Council of Exercise and teaches at a local, the Colorado State University, and gave a very powerful presentation on how important exercise is for good health, especially as you age. People who don't exercise have more health problems. So that one was to try to help us in the ministry to maintain our health longer and keep a higher quality of health. Another session was living the life of a ministerial wife, a meeting of some of any of the wives who wanted to meet together. Maximizing your computer skills, another one. So give you an idea of what we're doing there on that day and trying to continue to grow and learn and improve. And Monday after, toward the end of the day, everybody comes back together, and Mr. Clyde Kylo, who's the chairman of the council, gave these concluding remarks, which again were right on. I mean, he was very effective. Let me just say this appropriately and properly. I think I can do so. That it would be naive for you to assume that when you get hundreds of people together, hundreds of ministers and wives, that everybody agrees on everything. Now, if you said, oh, I'm sure, Mr. Duker, everybody back there, because they're converted and have God's Holy Spirit, everybody agrees on everything, right? No. You ever read Acts chapter 15? Have you ever heard about Paul and Barnabas in the Bible? No, there is disputing. There's discussion, just like that word is used there, is disagreeing. Any of you here ever have a disagreement with anybody in the congregation here? So let's just be realistic. It's God's Spirit and God's truth. But his message in closing the conference was this: maximize the ministry. Maximizing our ministry was the theme. He says we must minimize our casualties. And he spoke about the Gulf War that took place about 10 years ago, and then about the recent war, where between, listen to this, 17% to 28% of casualties were caused by friendly fire. You all know what friendly fire is, right? Shooting our own people, accidentally, but killing our own people. Pretty high percentage, isn't it? Because you're out there in that desert rumbling and you can't, you know, sometimes you shoot your own people by mistake. And he applied it, of course, to the church. He said there's a lot in the Bible about friendly fire in the spiritual sense. And how much of this do we have in the church, where people who are members of God's church end up hurting one another, sometimes maybe contributing, could be, to deep serious wounds in brethren? Or, well, you can see the story. He did a very fine job of reviewing the actual war and friendly fire, and he said, when mothers, relatives, fathers at home hear that their son or daughter, husband or wife, whatever, father, was killed in the war, that's bad enough. But when they hear that they were killed by their own people, that's much worse. And what have we done to each other at times in the past, and how are we treating one another now? So it was really a good lesson, something to think about. Friendly fire within the church. We need to be always helping one another and not taking pot shots at one another, don't we? I'd like to close my message here now with a few scriptures, if you'd turn with me. These are just a few concluding scriptures regarding the church that we're all a part of, the church of God. Turn with me to Matthew 16. Matthew chapter 16, verse 18. It's very important when you're involved in the church, in any meetings, in any activity, in any part of anything that you do, because we are human beings with differences, aren't we? And we are human beings with problems, aren't we? And what is going to keep us continually together and working together are certain basic fundamental things that we remember from the Bible. Matthew 16:18, where Jesus said, "I say to you that you are Peter." He was speaking here, in this case, to Peter, some of the disciples. "You are Peter." The Greek word here is Petros, which just means a piece of rock. And then he goes on to say, "And on this rock," and he's using a different Greek word, not the same one he just used, referring to Peter. Here it's Petra, which means a massive rock, huge rock. "On this rock," he's referring to himself, "I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it." It's good to remember that, isn't it? The church that Jesus built will never die. It'll always be there. There will always be some true converted Christians somewhere, Jesus said. Hades being the grave. There'll always be some. Good to keep that in mind, isn't it? Colossians 1:18. So I keep this one in mind. No matter how much Satan attacks, no matter what happens, the church of God, God's people, will be around. Colossians 1:18. This is very important for us all to remember. And I think the ministers have to remember this as much as anyone. Colossians chapter 1, verse 18. Where Paul wrote, "And he is the head of the body." Here it's referring to about Jesus Christ. "He is the head of the body, the church, who is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in all things he may have the preeminence." Because we all know ministers have human nature too, and it could be real easy, and has happened in the church in the past, for wrong attitudes and competition, a different spirit and attitude to develop among ministers. And God has certainly put us through trying and testing in the ministry as well, hasn't he, over the years. So we need to remember who the true head of the church is, and that is Jesus Christ. Always. And he's alive and he is well. And he will be trying and testing the hearts of all of us. That's comforted me many times over the years to remember it's not a man who's the head of the church or a group of men. It is Jesus Christ. And he really is alive and well. 1 Corinthians 12:18. 1 Corinthians 12:18. These are all about the church. Things to remember that are very important. This one says, 1 Corinthians 12:18. Remember 1 Corinthians 12, where Paul is talking about the body, using the physical body to teach us spiritual lessons. And in verse 18, he says, "Now God has set the members, each one of them, in the body, just as he pleased." That's very comforting to know that. That if we are all doing our best to yield to God and submit to him, stay humble, faithful, God will set us, each of us, as members where he wants us in the body. That's a promise. That's there. He will do it. God determines those things. Ephesians chapter 4. Just got two more and I'm finished. Ephesians chapter 4. Notice Ephesians 4. First of all, verses 11 and 12. And then we'll go down to verse 16. So Ephesians 4:11. "And he himself," referring to Christ, "gave some to be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers." And so we had a lot of pastors and teachers and some evangelists meeting together in Cincinnati. And what is the purpose of the ministry? It's for the preparation of the saints for the work of serving and for the work of the ministry. And we look upon it that way, that the ministry's job is to help all of you, all of God's people, to continue to grow in your service to God and to others, to help you to grow, encourage you, and make it possible for you to grow, and for the edifying of the body of Christ, to build it up Now drop down to verse 16. From whom the whole body, joined and knit together by what every joint supplies, according to the effective working by which every part does its share, causes growth of the body for the edifying of itself in love. Kind of a long verse. But what it's talking about there that is so important, that God has established His church and a ministry and the saints so that we might edify one another, build up one another, serve one another, and help the church to grow stronger so that we might serve the world, that we might reach out to the world. And so, do you ever wonder what your part is in the church? You ever say, God, where do you want to use me more effectively? How can I better serve in your body? You know, that's a very important question for all of us, and to take to God and say, God, you know me. You know my personality. You know everything about me. Help me to be yielded and humble and just serve where I can. But be praying about it. I know many of you have for many years and will continue to. And my last scripture is Romans 12. In closing, Romans chapter 12, verses 4 through 6. Romans chapter 12, verses 4 through 6. For as we have many members in one body, see, and united, the United Church of God is a part, a large part, of the broader spiritual body, the Church of God. As we have many members in one body, but all members do not have the same function, so we, being many, are one body in Christ, and individually members of one another. So anytime somebody is someone that God has called and wants to obey God, is saying that we are individually members one of another. There's a common bond among the people that God has called who love His law, that song told us, and who want to keep His Sabbath and holy days and all of His commandments. Verse 6, having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us. And each of us, every one of us, does have different gifts and abilities according to the grace God has given you, what He's gifted you with. Paul here is inspired to say, let us use them. And so these are important things to remember regarding the church, that it's God's church. Christ is the head of it. He built it. God has set every one of us, every member in the body, regardless of our differences in personality, regardless of conflicts that we may have with different people, we must remember it's very important that it's iron sharpening iron with one another, and that every part of the body plays an important role within the church together, and that God encourages us to use our gifts to serve. And so that's what we were doing back in Cincinnati. I was back there 5 days because there were some meetings prior to the General Conference of Elders and regional pastors' meetings after the General Conference of Elders. Those 3 days that I've told you about, there are meetings before and after while everybody's together, but I don't have time to go into those today, and it's not necessary. But many lessons to be learned. Some of the big lessons, of course, are the great importance of learning to work together, to stick together and to work together in serving God and accomplishing His will in our lives. So the United Church of God, thanks to God's blessings, your prayers, your loyalty, your support, your generosity, and your tithes and offerings, the United Church of God and International Association is moving forward. We have just completed this month in May our 8th year. We actually met during the Spring Holy Days 8 years ago to form the United Church of God. And it was finally officially totally completed and done on the day of Pentecost, 1995. So we are now 8 years old. So we have a lot to be thankful for, brethren, and the church and the work of the church is moving forward. Thank you for your part in it.